Welcome to the One Board Podcast. This is your host, Ryan Gutowski, joined today by the one and only role model to Jake the Snake Roberts, WWE wrestler, Bob Kroll. How are you doing, Bob?
Wow.
You didn't know where
Jake
I was going
the Snake
with that one.
Roberts, really?
Yeah. He looks up to you greatly. He told me himself.
Oh, man. Yeah, good old Jake the Snake.
I don't know why. He was such a weird, odd character growing up. Like, I grew up watching wrestling on Saturdays after cartoons. It was one of those things I still tell my kids about it. Like, wrestling came on after cartoons on Saturday mornings. And so I watched it. And even though I knew it was fake and it was all bullcrap and it was ridiculous, it was still very entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Completely entertaining. I think every kid from our generation did the same thing. I mean, Sergeant Slaughter, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Ultimate Warrior, Bushwhackers. Yeah. Come on, you know?
It's crazy. Just the characters.
I still remember all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. How are you doing, Bob? We're here to talk about board games and board game related items.
I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing real good.
Good. We've got some cool stuff coming up on One Board Family. We've got some really good Kickstarters that we're going to be checking out over the next couple of weeks.
Yes, we do.
Rick just published a wonderful review for Hedara, which you're going to be telling us about later in this episode. And then we've got a special segment because, as you may have noticed, Rick didn't intro the episode. It's because
he didn't.
Yeah.
Why didn't he?
He's got a baby.
What?
Yeah.
A baby.
Yeah. So him and his wife, Sarah, had a little baby girl, and so he's taking a little bit of time to be a dad and do all the cool non-sleeping things, and we're going to continue with the podcast for a little bit. Of course, without Rick, it's subpar, but you know.
Wow, that's a compliment.
I'm sure he'll tell us that.
Yeah.
Listen to the podcast. It was okay. It was fine.
So that's what Rick will tell us. It's subpar without him.
Yes.
Okay. I thought you were saying it was subpar because it was without. I was like, wow, that was a compliment. And Rick never gives you compliments.
That's true. So let's talk about what we've been playing, man. We have been playing some Sushi Roll. We got a copy of Sushi Roll from Game Right Games, and we're going to be doing a full review for this later on in the month. But Sushi Roll is a really cool, I think we've actually talked about it before because you brought it over for our family to check out.
Yes.
Probably at the beginning of the summer, maybe in the spring. Mm-hmm. But I don't, it's interesting because, like, the more I play it, I think the more I enjoy little pieces of it. You know, the little take that element, because what happens is everybody's given a certain number of dice. Everybody simultaneously rolls those dice. You put them on your little sushi conveyor belt. And then depending on who has the red outline conveyor belt, that person goes first. So there's a lot of strategy in where you go in the turn order. Because stealing using chopsticks to swap a die of a certain face is a really big deal in this game. And so there's a little bit of take that I really like. And what I'm finding with the game is that you really need to save up those rerolls, which are menu items, and you need to save up those chopsticks to steal a die from somebody else because they're really valuable as the game goes on.
They are very valuable. Also, what really calls out to me in that game, just right off the bat, besides the Sushi Go artwork, but the dice. I am a huge fan of custom dice, and there are so many of them in that game.
They're really nice, and the colors really pop.
They're super vibrant.
It's a good-looking game. And so,
it really is.
Kind of like if you're familiar with Sushi Go, you're going to play three rounds just like you do in Sushi Go or Sushi Go Party, and you're drafting these die. So it's kind of a limited palette. If you know the Sushi Go cards, then this will be easy for you. It doesn't have all the cool things like Sushi Go Party, but I could definitely see, you know, that's one thing that I could see Game Right doing is doing an expansion for Sushi Roll introducing edamame and miso soup and things like that with some different mechanics down the road, because it has, you have your base setup just like Sushi Go, but it's definitely ripe for expansion.
Most certainly. I agree. There's plenty of room for expansion, and I will buy it because I am certain it will come with more dice.
Oh, yeah. Those dice. Beautiful. So you're going to actually talk about a game that has no dice today, Bob. So what is it?
Yeah, right? A game? I'm talking about a game that has no dice whatsoever. That's weird, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I know I love my dice. But actually, we have been playing Hedara from Z-Man Games. Now, we got a chance to demo this at Origins. Rick and I did. You were not with us at the time.
I was playing Monster Slaughter with my wife.
Ah, Monster Slaughter. I didn't even remember where you were, yeah. But I just knew that. I was like, okay, Ryan's not doing this. It's me and Rick. Let's just do this. Like, but man, I'll tell you what. At Origins, I was just completely blown away by this game. And I had to wait so long.
Yeah.
To get this game, because Beth from Z-Man, I think we begged her for that copy, but it was only copy they had in existence. Yeah. So after we were done demoing that, we had to wait for a little while, and I got a copy now. Yep. And I think in like a week, I have played it 10 plus times.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it is a phenomenal, what'd you call it? Civilization building. Yep. So, kind of like, Seven Wonders, Through the Ages, like a combination of those two things. Mm-hmm. I know Rick mentioned a little bit of a splendor mechanic with the decreasing, the more cards you buy of a certain color, the better discount you get based on those, that part of your civilization, whether it's the arts or military or money. There are four different tracks that you need to pay attention to. And this is an open draft or a closed draft and an open draft combined in the same game. And I think that's one of my favorite parts about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one particular type of card drafting.
Yeah.
Each age, and there are three of them, you're going to be drafting cards, but you're going to be drafting cards from five different available piles, two cards at a time, as a closed draft, so everybody will draw two cards, do an action with one of them, and return one that they would not like at the moment back to a face-up discard pile. And when that phase is done, where everybody has selected all the cards that are face-down, you're going to go back through, and you're going to start selecting cards that are face-up from the discard pile from top-down. And that different mix of drafting just makes this game, like, so, I don't want to say so different, but fresh.
Yeah.
Feels good. Feels exciting. And like I said, I've played it 10 times, and I can't stop playing it.
One thing that I really enjoy about the game is that you have this mechanic where you're discarding one of the cards, and you referenced this a minute ago, that you're discarding one of the cards that you don't purchase, but then you know that it could come back up where you get the opportunity to buy it. When we played, I played it with you 2 weekends ago, and I remember just thinking, okay, I know that I want both cards. This is the one that I can afford now. I'm going to put this one back, but I'm hoping that I get the opportunity at this card again. And
yep.
So I really like that you're not throwing away a card and saying, I'm never going to see this one again. Now, there's a mechanic where you throw away a card, goes back to the box, and you get cash for it.
Yeah, it's the trashing element.
Yeah,
Same kind of thing it is and as it has in Seven Wonders, where you're trashing a card out of the game for like two or three coins. I forget. It's been a little while since I played Seven Wonders. So it's the same element in Hedara, because money is very important.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Your money can be tight.
Yeah.
So controlling the income of your civilization is a very important thing. And you see on the board, you can see what's coming up, what particular style of cards you're about to take from what type of element of the civilization. So you can see, well, I'd be interested in upping my income, but I don't have a lot of money. So
yeah.
I'm about to draft next turn from the military pile. So I'll trash that card for cash, and I'll discard the other one.
Yeah.
And then when my next turn comes up to take from the pile of income adjusting cards, I'll have money to pay for something out of there. So it's, I mean, just altogether a super well-rounded, feels good. The components, the artwork, it's just all laid out very, very, very nicely.
Yep.
Now, I will say this, it is not a small game.
No, it takes up so much room on the
It takes up some room, and understandably, you're piling cards in front of a personal player board where you may have 15, 20 cards of each type of, well, probably not that much, but, you know, a lot of cards of five different categories. You're building a civilization, so, I mean, what do you, you know, what do you expect? So, it is a bit of a table hog, but knowing that, it is a phenomenal civilization game.
It really is. And I think it's very accessible to people. You know, you can teach it without too much. There's a learning curve, of course, but it's not something that's going to be 3 hours on the table, you know, which is what I struggle with a lot of civilization games. You know, I want that Civ experience, but I don't want to sit there for 3 hours, you know?
You're right.
I couldn't wrap my family into something like that. And Adara, it plays up to five players. And this is a game that I definitely see my wife and kids playing this game. No problem.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that it's entry level, but I'm not going to say that it's super intense, heavyweight either. Using the BGG scale, me personally, I would probably say it's like a 2.5, probably 2.5, maybe 2.6, something like that.
Because there's definitely strategy to it. You have to feed your people. You have to make sure that your resources are taken care of. You have statues that you can build for additional perks. You've got military to take care of, you know. So there's a lot to take care of, but it's just the right weight. So
it is. And we haven't decided this yet, but it's probably going to end up on, I'm going to say it's going to end up on my top 10. For the year. When we sit down and figure that out, we write those articles, it's going to be on my top 10.
I've got my...
For 2019.
I've got my running top 10 list, and it is in there. So I'm very happy.
Oh, you already have a running top 10 for 2019.
So I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, I need to start thinking about which ones have been the most impressive and which games I can't. My only problem is Dulasaur Island, I found out the other day, was a 2018 release. It released in November or December.
Yes.
And so... Yeah. I feel like
I played a little leeway with I think it was Architects last year or something. I think it was like
Architects December. Was 2018.
No, you know what? It might have been Coimbra. It might have been like
there
was something on my list that was like 2018, but like second week of December. Or
So that's my only problem is Dulasaur Island's not going to make it because of the published date, but maybe it does anyway. I'll put a little asterisk by it. So. Cool. Well, since Rick is not here, Rick actually recorded a brand new segment for us here on the podcast. This next segment that you're going to hear may be a little low. We're going to try to work with audio, but this next segment is called Rick Talks About Board Games While Holding a Baby. This is Rick talking about board games while holding his new child. And then right after that, we've got a special interview with Rachel Blasky. She's going to be telling us about Mint Cooperative, which is currently on Kickstarter right now. So we're going to hear from Rachel, and we'll be back with you in just a couple minutes.
Hey, everyone. This is Rick Talks About Board Games While Holding a Baby, a series of podcast entries where I talk about board games while holding a baby. So, this past week, my wife gave birth to her first daughter. She went into labor early on Wednesday, and so we started to pack to get ready to go to the hospital. And as we were doing so, I added a few card games that I thought would be choices that we could take to the hospital and maybe play while we sat around and waited on doctors and things like that. So I threw in my bag Fox in the Forest, which is a nice two-player trick-taking game. I also added in Coloretto, which is, I think, 2 to 4. Nice little set collection, kind of tear and share kind of component, I guess. I don't know. That's really fun. Also grabbed Matryoshka, which is a very poorly pronounced job on my part, but it's about having the most valuable Russian nesting doll collection. And then also Circus Flaccati, which is a very nice set collection game. Very quick, easy to play. And I brought these thinking the two of us could play them, and then maybe other people if we had visitors or guests. So, how did this work for me? How well did these games go at the hospital? Well, it turns out I'm an idiot, because at a hospital, when you're giving birth to a baby, you do not play games, because your wife is giving birth to a baby. And also, once she has given birth to a baby, you then stay up and never sleep. So, whenever we had the chance, we would pass out. And whenever I talked to my wife about playing card games, she would throw the nearest object to her hands at my face. We had guests come over, and by the time they were in the room, I didn't want them to sit around and play a game. I wanted them to go away so I could pass out on the couch. So any prospective or future fathers out there that are wondering, what should I take to the hospital so that we could play while we sit around? Don't be foolish. Just take a nap. Ignore board games. Well, that's the first edition of Rick Talks About Board Games While Holding a Baby. Tune in next time, and we'll find out more about games while I'm holding a baby.
All right, I'm here with Rachel Blasky. How are you doing today, Rachel?
I'm good. It's been real busy this week.
Yeah, once the kids get back to school and everything's back into full force, and you actually are in the midst of starting a Kickstarter project for your latest game. So you've been a little busy.
Yes, we're launching on Monday, and so we're down to the nitty-gritty, and we're trying to make sure that all of our T's are crossed and our I's are dotted and all that nonsense, and make sure that it's all ready for everyone.
That's awesome. So this Kickstarter project is for, well, if people don't already know you, you are part of the series of Mint games, Mint Works, yep. Mint Delivery, and now Mint Cooperative. Tell us about it.
Well, my husband is Justin Blasky. He's the designer of Mint Works and Mint Delivery. And then I kind of came into the fold, and now we were able to accept a design from John Gilmore and Brian Lewis, who did Dinosaur Island together. And shortly after that, they were talking about how they wanted to do a Mint game. And so the story goes that they were asking each other, hey, do you know Justin? No, do you know Justin? And they reached out and decided to work together. It was really fun.
Awesome. Well, this is a big deal, because this is going to be your third in the series of Mint games. And it was funny, because actually today I was actually playing Mint Works at work with a friend of mine. And so two of my coworkers, we were sitting around, we were playing Mint Works. It was their first time playing. And I was sitting there just thinking about how much game is packed into that small tin box. And so tell us about, this is actually going to be your first cooperative game that you guys have put out there. So tell us about that.
Yeah, the idea is you try and get a lot of game in a tiny tin. And so it's not going to be the simple stuff that you would expect in that small of a package. It's going to have just a little bit of something extra that makes it approachable for somebody who's not a gamer. But someone who is a gamer, they aren't going to want to just put it away as soon as they played it once. So we like to focus on a singular mechanism in each product, so that way we can kind of use it to evangelize the hobby a little bit. This is an example of worker placement. Now at this point you can, you know, keep going and learn about Lords of Waterdeep, or, you know, something like that. And Mint Cooperative is our first cooperative game. And we decided when John and Brian brought it to us, we thought it would be a really approachable thing to be able to have non-gamers. We're going to, like, the idea is you're going to take them out to dinner or something, and you're going to be waiting for your food, and you're going to say, hey, there's this game that is really cool and I want to show you. And you don't even have to stress out because we're all on the same side. You don't have to worry about trying to compete. I'm not going to beat you or whatever. We're going to beat these evil villains together. And so, I love the theme. I love how it is superheroes against villains, and in a Minty universe that they are dental villains.
Nice.
Yes. Yes. It makes for a really good storytelling experience too.
So tell me about the, you know, we live in an age where superhero movies are coming out at such a rapid pace. And so Mint Cooperative has this superhero theme. And I love just looking at the cards and some of the names of the places. Tell us about some of the jokes, some of the Minty jokes that are in this box.
Oh, I absolutely love the puns. And
yes.
And I love that the universe is kind of starting to develop, because you're building things in Mint Works, and then in Mint Delivery you learned more about the location of Mortimer County itself, and how there's Cinnamon Center and Spearmint Springs and all these different places that you're going to then be delivering mints to from Mintopia City. And now these villains are coming out of nowhere and they're causing trouble in all these areas, and we find out that Mort has worked with superheroes that are now coming to save each of their individual cities that they're responsible for protecting. And you have a Cinnamon Center that is being watched over by Citizen Cinnamite. And you've got Peppermint Pizzazz watches over Peppermint Pines. And nice. I love that it's easy to remember. It's like fun, and it always puts a smile on everybody's face. And when you're dealing with Mint and dental and all this fun little theme that we have, our intro boss is Nick Oteen. And
nice. Okay.
I mean, obviously that is going to combat against good breath, breath, and nicotine don't go together. And so we've got to get him out of there. And then if you can beat him, then you're going to move on to Gorillic. And he is a sulfurous simian that can then put a real dent in your breath also. So you've got to beat him.
Nice.
And then if you get to the point where you feel like you're a big dog, you can try and take on Gingivitis. And she's the mother of mouth disease, and she can definitely teach you a lesson. So there's a lot of depth and fun to go into it.
So these different bosses, basically, these different evil villains, are they kind of tiered with kind of difficulty wise, so that people can kind of work their way up?
Yeah, that's kind of what we did.
Nice.
Yep. Nick is our intro guy. But he is no pushover. And so he actually handed somebody's butt right back to him the other day on Solo Board Gamers. There's a Facebook group that they were doing a live, and they lost bad.
Wow.
Like, 3 times in a row, yeah. right live. And like, oh, nope. It's kind of nice, because a lot of gamers have a problem with co-ops being too easy. Yeah. And they say, oh, I mean, it's not that fun. I mean, a non-gamer thinks it's cool because they won. But the gamer, they're like, hey, I really want a challenge. Yeah. Well, this is a challenge. This is actually pretty tough to come out on top.
I think it's really cool, the theme, because I think this is going to be one that's going to connect with kids also. You know, when we talk about One Board Family, we talk about multi-generational gaming, you know, sitting around the game table with whether your son or daughter is younger, or you have teenage kids, or whether a niece or nephew. You know, it's really a fun, it seems like a very fun game that's going to be something that's going to get the kids involved and also like people who aren't gamers, like you said. So yeah, Mint Cooperative looks really cool. And you guys actually, you know, we're recording this just before the launch, but actually the campaign is currently on Kickstarter. You can actually look in the show notes and you'll be able to get over to the Kickstarter so you can help this one fund. But tell us a little about what you guys have learned. You know, this is going to be your third Kickstarter project. What have you guys learned through the process of going to Kickstarter and developing something that that is crowdsourced?
Well, it's really interesting, actually, because Justin really paved the way, because he had a major hand in the last in the first two Kickstarters, and he just really did it well. He knew how to connect with the community. He put in the time. And then now that we're getting to a place where I'm able to step in and start kind of learning in his, as his little Padawan, I have been kind of watching how things have evolved, because I was kind of in the background on the last, couple and really kind of cut my teeth on the, one that we did earlier this year that didn't fund. And so that was a really good experience too, because it's one of those things where you can try, you can be experienced and you have a lot of good advice and good ideas, but sometimes it's just, it doesn't work. And so that was really interesting with Area 1851 Express. We just weren't able to make that one fund.
That's right. I forgot about that. I forgot about that one. I saw that one on Kickstarter. Okay. I didn't realize that hadn't funded.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that one didn't fund. And I mean, part of that is that, I mean, it doesn't have the audience that we already have that already love the Mint universe and the, and the Mint games. Yeah. And it's just, it was a different demographic and we were trying something new and it just, we, it didn't work. So now we're back to what we're good at. We're, really excited because I feel like we have gotten some good spread. We've got a great Facebook group going where we're able to just pour content in and let people know, because there's so many reviews coming out right now, so many previews and so many podcasts. And it's really cool to just hear the buzz of Mint Cooperative everywhere right now. And so in at a price point of $10, I mean there's no reason that it shouldn't fund. So I'm pretty pumped. I think this is going to be the one that's going to launch us into our next stratosphere. So
that's really awesome. I know while I missed the first Mint Works game, I actually played it with a friend of mine who did, you know, go through Kickstarter and buy it. And when you guys came out with Mint Delivery and did the combo pack, that was the one me and my wife, Erin, we said, yeah, we have to get this, you know? And so it was so good to be able to open that package and have two tins sitting in there and just be able to enjoy these games and have something, you know, that's something that we do often. We go to dinner and we'll take our game with us and we'll play, you know? So we love the fillers around dinner. Yep. And so Mint Works and Mint Cooperative and, you know, Mint Delivery, these are the games that you should be playing at the dinner table while you're eating, it's you know, or before dinner comes. Yep. So yep.
I love that there's always a game in my purse, always.
Absolutely.
My kids are like, what do you have in there? And I'm like, well, recently I've had Anoka from why am I blanking now? From XYZ Labs. Anoka is fun. It's a rock, paper, scissors, but it's redone. And they did a big tournament at Gen Con, and they actually have Arch Ravels coming out, on the 23rd that they're real excited about. And I love Adam, where we get along really well. So that's been hanging out in my bag. And then I also have had Microbrew sitting in there, which is another tin game.
Yeah.
And I love the tin game family, like all of the companies that put out the tin games, we all talk and we all kind of just support each other. Cause it's a nice niche that it has plenty of room. And so we're all just kind of really supportive of each other. And I really, really love that.
That's awesome.
And what else? Oh, last night, I think it was, two nights ago, we went to Outback for dinner. We ran away and, we put out 10 Minute Heist before, from Daily Magic right before, and they
that's
actually,
right. I saw your Facebook post about that.
Yeah, it was great. I like that game too. So, I love the small box game. So I'm excited to put some more out on Kickstarter. And now that we have over 30,000 of Mintworks itself circulating out there, we're ready for another reprint because this will be our third now. And so we're going to actually be making that available. It's been out of stock again for a while, and so. Yeah. Going to be a part of the Kickstarter as an add-on again.
That's great. Well, if you haven't already gotten Mint Works and Mint Delivery, be sure to pick those up when you check out Mint Cooperative. Mm-hmm. Be sure to look in the show notes and you'll be able to get a link, and just head over to the Kickstarter, because I think what you see in that box is going to be very impressive. So thanks so much, Rachel, for coming on the show, and wishing you the best of luck on this Kickstarter.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Ryan.
Right, Bob, we are back. Rachel was talking about Mint Cooperative. That is going to be a very cool game. I really dig the theme. And it's interesting. I was just playing with the coworkers. I brought Mintworks in the other day, and people really enjoyed it. So it was a cool.
I love Mintworks.
It's a great worker placement game. So yeah. Portable. 15 minutes. So good. So. Anyway, so we wanted to get into a topic that you and I were talking about actually through chat at work. Three games that surprised us. Three games where we looked at the box and we were like, that looks pretty cool. But when we set it on the table, we played it and then played it again, then played it again and played it again. So you got a list of three, Bob?
I do, Rye. And the first one I want to talk about has just been I stopped counting. I think I even stopped putting it into BGG stats because I play it so often, and I kid you not, on average for the last how long has it been since we've been to Origins? 3 months?
Yeah.
Okay, so for the past 3 months, I believe I played this at an average of one time a day.
Really?
And I'm not kidding.
Because you fit a couple games in during the day or during a lunch break or something.
Yeah. And we're not even talking about. I'm not counting the days on the weekends. So at an average, I have probably played this at least once a day for the last 3 months. And that is Skull King.
Yeah, that's a trick taking game that you introduced me and Josiah to.
Yes, so Skull King was actually introduced to me by a friend of ours, Isaac, from Gaming with Sidekicks, at Origins. I was there one night. It was late. I was actually really tired, and we had just got done playing some games, and they wanted to hang out. A whole bunch of the guys wanted to hang out. Isaac called me over. He's like, "What are you doing? Get over here. You're playing this game." I said, "Okay. Fine, mm-hmm. I'll play." I went over there. They pulled out Skull King, and they taught me Skull King. And I was like, "Man, I've played a game similar to this before." And it has similarities to a game called Up and Down the River, or it's a little bit of Euchre and Hearts and Spades all mixed together in this really awesome trick-taking game, mm-hmm. and it's super accessible. It's, you know, 35 minutes, and it can play up to six, and it's small. It's just a deck of cards.
Yeah.
It's about probably 70 cards, 72 cards, something like that. And, man, it is just so much fun, so tense. If you're competitive in any nature, like, this game is just so much fun. It's probably, like I said, I played it every single day for the last 3 months, and it is my top card game and trick-taking game of all time.
Really?
Okay. And I was not expecting this. I had never heard of this game. They sat me down. I was like, "Man, what is this?" Totally off the radar. didn't see it coming, and now I don't know what I would do without this game in my life, honestly, for real.
That's cool.
Funny story, I've played it so much that I bought a second copy.
Yeah, those cards are probably starting to wear out after holding them.
Yes, they are.
So, that's really cool. That's awesome. Yeah, we played Skull King. I liked it. I thought it was more complex than your average. It's not really super complex. I think there's just a lot of layers to it. And
there is.
You know, I think teaching somebody those layers, it takes a few minutes, you know? I really
enjoyed it. It does, especially if you're not used to trick-taking games, too.
Yeah. My son, when he played with us, he was like, nah, I'm good. He's not used to trick-taking games, so.
It was also like 11:30 at night.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And Josiah had been at that Southern Fried Gaming convention for like 10 hours.
A long time. So my number three for games that surprised me, I would say Blue Lagoon. The first time I played Blue Lagoon, this is a Reiner Knizia game, and the first time I played Blue Lagoon, somebody had bought it for me for Christmas. It was on my wish list, and I was super excited about it because it had a really fun art style. I'm not a huge fan of area control games, but I really like the art in it. I really like the layout of the islands and things like that. We played Blue Lagoon one day with, I think it was me and Aaron and Kendall, maybe. We played around Christmas time. As soon as we finished the first game, I said, we need to play that again. So I think myself and Aaron played it again. You played it. Actually, didn't you introduce it to us? You brought it over right before Christmas. Yes, that's right. We played our first game with you. And then when we got it, we ended up playing multiple times. And Blue Lagoon is just a really well done area control game that has a lot of a lot of strategic placement of your people, watching other people's moves. There's a lot to pay attention to, and it's really competitive. Probably one of the most competitive games that we own. And it's got such a cute look to it. It really surprised me the type of game that it was, and it's a game that I actually enjoy way more than I expected to. That was Blue Lagoon.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a Knizia. I mean, come on, you know?
It's a very good-looking Knizia.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful artwork. Again, popping colors, really good-looking colors. Vibrant, bright. The funny thing about that game is, and you say area control, and a lot of area control is like this, and you say very competitive, you can see, like, immediately. So some games you can't, you know? They're like, wait a minute, that move you took 10 turns ago did this to me, and now I can't. In Blue Lagoon, like, the second somebody puts one of their player pieces down on the board, if you know what they're doing, and they know what they're doing. So it's that kind of game where, like you said, it's super competitive, and it causes you to just stare at the other person like, did you really just do that?
And
you
know what I mean? On top of that, you're actually looking and saying, do I continue with my plan, or do I have to ward off this person who's coming into my territory? Like, so it really makes you adjust on the fly. So So what's your second one?
So I didn't realize you were going in reverse. Because wouldn't have done. So why don't you go in reverse and I'll go from top down.
Okay, so Skull King was your number one surprise.
Yeah, Skull King was my number one surprise.
Okay.
So number two is actually going to be, now this game is not out yet, but it is a Roll and Write that is coming out on the 24th of September on Kickstarter. And that is a game called Seven Bridges. So, Ryan, I believe, yes, you have played this with me. Man, Roll and Writes. I love Roll and Writes. A lot of people probably know that. I own a lot of Roll and Writes. And this gentleman who created this game, Ron Halliday, contacted me through Facebook and said, hey, you might want to take a look. I see you own a lot of Roll and Writes. You talk about Roll and Writes. You show pictures. I made a Roll and Write. I was like, okay, cool. He said it's called Seven Bridges. It's about Königsberg, and it's a route building. I was like, okay, it sounds interesting. I would love to check it out. You know, that's what we do, right? So he gave me the files. Didn't even have a printed copy of anything yet. He just gave me the print and play. Mm-hmm. He said, here, check this out. you know, I'd really like you for you to look at this. Take a look at it. So I went, I printed some stuff out. I think I printed two maps out and played a solo game first by myself. And as you know, it's the story from there.
Yeah.
It was just complete out of control from there. I played the game once and I was like, what is this? This is like, I knew there was something about this game, like immediately, right away. So I printed out a whole bunch of copies. I went to him. I asked him, hey, you, this needs to be shown. How do I get this shown? What do I got to do? So they gave me permission to take it to Origins, and we sat down at Origins with a whole bunch of people and just started showing this to everybody, and everybody got hooked. And now it's about to come out, and coincidentally, I just got my review copy tonight before we started this podcast, and I opened it up, and even from just being a review copy, it's gorgeous. And if you like route building roll and writes, you're rolling dice and selecting different types of routes and shapes that you like to draw on a map. And you're just trying to make this route around this city and connect things and get points for seeing different landmarks and walking past trees that are on this map. It is just so, I think the box calls it a stroll, S-T-R-O-L-L, strolling, right? Because it is, it's a very weird mix of relaxing and tension at the same time. That's a hard thing for me to convey, but it's tense because you want the right moves that you can get to make the things that you need to make on the map. But at the same time, you selecting the dice and then going on to study the board or the paper that you are going to get and the colors that are on the paper and the roads, and you're just coloring. You're basically just coloring. Yeah. And it's almost like you're making artwork. When you're done, you get to score it, you know? But that, like I said, that was a complete and total out of left field shock that Ron and I hooked up together like that. Yeah. And, man, it's been really great so far, but it's like 2 weeks. It comes out on Kickstarter. It's called Seven Bridges. Everybody needs to check that out.
Yep. Yep. Seven Bridges is really good. We're going to have a full preview. You're going to be writing the preview for it. I'm really excited about seeing what you think of the finished or soon to be finished copy. I have a card game as my second surprise. You, a couple of weeks ago, you asked me if I want to play 5-2-1-1. And I looked at it and I said, it looks like Kwanchai Moria's artwork from, you know, the game. It looks cool, but I don't know. You know, honestly, I was like, whatever. And once you showed me the simplicity of 5-2-1-1, and then I realized the depth there as you're judging, you're kind of bluffing and watching your opponents, and you're just kind of looking at what other people are playing, and then you're trying to mess up other people's scores. You know, you're basically playing, you have a hand of five cards. The title says everything. You have a hand of five cards. You play two cards on the first turn, you play one card on the second turn, and you play one card on the third turn. And what happens is you're trying to hit a certain number. You have a bust number for the number, the color of the cards on the table. Once you hit that number and go over, those cards are no longer, they can't be applied as the winning set. So then you look at the next color. So if yellow busts and it goes over its limit, then you look at the next highest card, which might be green, and then all the green cards on the table score. It's really cool. You have a lot of low number cards, so you have a lot of kind of junk cards, but then you have those high number cards, which are like sixes, and you're sitting there, you're saying, when is the right time to play the six? Because I don't want I don't want it to go away. I don't want it to be thrown in the trash. I want to score this number six. And then you have these Kododo dragons, which are these little lizards on the cards. And if during that turn at the end of the round, those dragons add up to a certain number of dragons on the table, the dragons win, and no single color wins. So it's a really cool, quick, fun card game. We'll play two or three rounds of it in an hour. It is a really fun game, and it really surprised me because I did not anticipate liking it as much as I did. And now we are playing it at least twice a week with the kids, with company, just bring it with us wherever we go. 5-2-1-1.
I love trying in 5-2-1-1, thinking about, like, what it, I like the social, it's not social deduction, but the social engineering, I guess, maybe. Mm-hmm. And not really engineering, but I guess it is maybe logical deduction, but it's a lot of odds. Just looking at people and just trying to figure out, like, is he going to play this color?
Mm-hmm.
Why would he play that color? That doesn't benefit him. Like, I love that deduction part of it. And then when you go to turn the cards over, it's completely not anything you were thinking of.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I just love that element of surprise in that game, and that sometimes, even though it's complete disappointment, it's just the excitement of what's he about to do? What's he about to do?
And then when multiple people are on the same page and you are throwing down the exact same card and then bust everybody.
Yeah, and then bust the whole thing. Like, why did you do that?
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a fun game.
It's a fun game. So
yeah.
So what's your last one?
My last one was actually a very recent one. And you showed me this one, and that is Coin Quest. And so I came over to your house the other day, and I think it was maybe a week or two ago. And you're like, I think we were looking at I was teaching you Wingspan.
Yeah.
And we got done. We had a little bit of time left, and you started busting out Coin Quest. And I don't want to take anything away from the game, but my initial thoughts of, like, looking at the box and stuff, I was like, man, this looks like a $5 game that you get you know, Ollie's or some kind of discount store. And I don't put a lot into those type of games because I've played a lot of them and they are usually kind of disappointing.
Yep.
But man, I was completely surprised at this game. It is so ridiculously simple.
Yes.
And what I like about it is I love that 1-2-3 reveal.
Yep.
And the immediate disappointment or excitement of I did it.
Yes.
That satisfaction or that disappointment, that low or that high of bidding behind a blind player screen.
Yeah.
And I just find that so fun. That element of waiting, like, oh, I hope I did this right.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And you're drawing coins out of a bag and then placing them on places to try to win other coins that are in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
And when you reveal and everybody's set, you're hoping the coins that you put to pay for things that are on the table are better than other people's coins that they put in the same places. So you have this element of bidding behind a player screen to get more coins to go into your bag to help you to bid better. And the set collection on those coins and the special powers on those coins, like drawing a coin out of your bag that lets you draw an extra coin out of your bag, which is beyond the hand limit or the pot limit, whatever you want to call it, but and other coins that let you do other abilities, like trash coins. It's like a deck builder, but it's a bag builder, a very simple bag builder, but it still has those elements. And trashing weaker coins out of your bag, like bronze coins, is a really cool thing to do. So I was just completely blown away by Coin Quest, so much so that I went out and bought my own copy when I got home. Now, it was a little bit hard to find. It was out of stock on Amazon, but you know, I was able to find somebody who had a copy on eBay.
Yeah.
And you know me, when I want a game, I want that game.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I have a copy now, and I also have your copy at the same time because I borrowed it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, no, you may be taking the photos because I'm going to write this one up, and we'll do a full review for Coin Quest shortly.
I can most certainly do that.
It's a really fun game. It is looks can definitely be deceiving on this one because it looks like a game that you wouldn't pay attention to on the store shelf, but it is a good, really solid game, and it's a
it
really
does. was, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't wrong about that. I don't mean to sound demeaning like that or anything, but it's
I've said it before in reviews. Artwork can make or break a game for me. You know, some of the games that I enjoy the mechanics of, the artwork has turned me off to it in a way that, like, I don't know how often I'll get it to the table because of the artwork, you know?
Right.
And it's like, I'm not saying that art is the top thing, but it does matter, you know, and especially when you have 1,000 games being released every year, like, you can't afford for your game to just be passed over because somebody's like, that looks like crap, you know?
Yeah, and it does. Okay, and I'm glad you're in agreement with me. Now, I will say this, the artwork for the actual components of the game, there's no need, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
And you'll see that when you, if you get the game and take a look at it, and I'll take some pictures and I'll make it look like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to be, get a big head about this, but I'll make it look gorgeous.
You will. You will.
Because that's just what I do.
That's what you do.
But seriously, the artwork for the components is not bad. There's not much. It looks like coins.
It's fine.
You know?
Yeah.
But the box, it just looked to me like
cheesy.
One of those games. I'm like, this is cheese. I'm not going to get this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you know. And that's a shame because the game is super fun.
It's really
and
good.
I hope that box doesn't keep a lot of people from actually trying that game. So
that's right.
One thing I will say is the price point was really good. So I really I think I got it for like 18.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
So yeah, really, really good price point. So I really appreciated that.
Very cool. So my last game is the game that's probably surprised me the most. Bob Ross, The Art of Chill. Rick will listen to this and be very excited. He kept telling me about how Bob Ross, The Art of Chill was actually a very good game. I would not take him seriously. And I brushed him off multiple times. And then finally he said, we need to play Bob Ross. I was like, okay, fine, we'll play Bob Ross. And I reluctantly played Bob Ross because I was like, I like Bob Ross as a person. And I don't want his name sullied by this hack of a game.
Right.
And then once he showed me how to play Bob Ross and me and Kendall played, I immediately got home, bought a copy from Target, and then had
That's
to
awesome.
Do a review. Did I do the review or did Rick?
I can't remember
which one
I remember
of us.
When that review went up, but I don't remember who did it.
Yeah, so anyway, I love Bob Ross, The Art of Chill is a very accessible painting game. It's fun. It's silly. There's these chill cards that, you know, Bob Ross has a little quote on each of the chill cards. I love getting in that mode of like, hey, what's up? You know, just cool cats sitting around painting, you know, and reading off the quote.
Oh, man.
Bob Ross, The Art of Chill is really silly, really fun, and I almost didn't give it a chance, and I'm glad we own it. We've played it at work a couple times. We've played it with friends and family over. It's a cool game, and I was very surprised that the mechanics work. So, you've played it though, right?
No, I would just say I don't own it, and I haven't played it. So, on your endorsement, not Rick's.
Okay. Play
on
it with
your,
us. Yeah.
Yeah, on your endorsement, I'll try it. If it just Rick, I wouldn't have tried it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So play it with us next time you're over. It's actually fun. I really enjoyed it. And it surprised
I would like
me
to
because
try it.
I didn't want to give it the time of day. So very cool. That'll do it for this episode of the podcast, this Rickless episode of the podcast. So thanks for joining us. And again, if you want to find out more about board games and playing board games with your family, head over to oneboardfamily.com. You can follow us on all these different social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And what about YouTube? Head over to oneboardfamily on all of those social media accounts. And Bob, until next time, we will see you at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.